Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
What happened in Vegas last night? Not staying in Vegas. We are talking about it. Could the Raiders be surprise contenders this season? The Dallas Cowboys did not ask a whole lot out of Zeke in week one. Can they rely on him all season long now? And the GOAT, Tom Brady. What was this? Was he trolling the Falcons ahead of their week two matchup down in Tampa? I don't know. Good Tuesday morning, everyone. Welcome to First Things First alongside Nick and Broussard and Kevin Wilds. I'm Jenna Wolf. Wilds, your guy, Thomas Edward Patrick Brady. This seemed innocent to me. I didn't see anything wrong with this. He was just doing a little social media post.
I am not buying the trolling. It's supposed to be a little Easter egg in there from his social media team. I'm not buying it at all, Jenna. The GOAT doesn't need to troll anybody.
Do not, because he's not selling it. He is not selling it. All right, we'll get to that in a second. We got to start, though. Oh, what a game. Raiders, Ravens last night picked this one up in overtime. Tied at 27, 3rd-and-7 for the Ravens. Lamar Jackson was trying to escape the pocket, but Carl Nassib punching the ball out. Raiders recover and take over. Two plays later, Derek Carr just going for it to a wide open Zay Jones for the walk-off win. Vegas trailed 14-0 at one point. Vegas tied the game three times in the fourth quarter, and then somehow, some way, the Raiders rallying for the overtime win. After the game, though, Ravens quarterback Lamar Jackson on what went wrong.
Any loss you have will be tough. You know, working so hard all season to prepare for a team and come down to overtime and we lose. But my team played great, though. So just got to keep building, keep stacking, keep getting better every day. We'll be fine. But that loss hurt. We got to move on quick. You know, everybody hate losing. The whole team hate losing. The coaching staff hate losing. Our cafeteria guys hate losing. You know, Manny and Shorty, those guys hate losing as well. You know, they're part of the team. It's going to be a quick turnaround, though. You know, we got the Chiefs Sunday. We just played Monday night, so we got to get ready.
So, full disclosure, we all jump on our morning meeting, and Nick jumps on, and he goes, Lamar was the story last night. So, Nick, let me start there. How much blame does Lamar deserve for this loss?
Well, a lot of it, and it's not, I know everyone's going to focus on the two fumbles late, particularly the one in overtime after the Ravens got a semi-miraculous goal line stand that ended in an interception, but that's not why I'm putting so much responsibility on Lamar. And I get it. If you stayed up and watched the game, you're saying, hey, Lamar drove him down the field. They kicked what should have been the game-winning field goal. If the defense could have just stopped Derek Carr and company from going 50 yards in 30 seconds. I understand that. But the fact of the matter is this. Lamar Jackson is a league MVP who needs to get better at a very specific part of his game. The accuracy on his passes that are not in the right middle of the field, intermediate distance. All the other passes are spraying all over the place. And it's only one game. But right now, he looks like the same passer that he's been from his rookie season. And yeah, that was a good enough passer to win league MVP. And he had one, we'll show it to you later, unbelievable play last night that ended in a touchdown pass. But what is putting a ceiling on the Ravens is Lamar's inability to just slightly improve the accuracy. And last night, I looked at it and said, okay, year four, let's see. And the opening results are not encouraging. I can almost, Broussard, deal with the fumbles because he's asked to do so much more as a runner than any other quarterback in league history. There's going to be some negative. There's going to be some downside to that. But he's got to get better with his precision passing. It does not appear that he has. And that, to me, is as big of a reason as any that the Ravens lost last night.
I'll give you that he didn't show much improvement in his passing game, Nick. No doubt about it. Although the pass to Sammy Watkins, the 46-yarder, was a great pass. I'm not going to put most of the blame on Lamar, because he mentioned the fumbles, obviously, in the post game, and he said he's got to do a better job of keeping two hands on the ball when he was under pressure. Then guess what? He would have had two hands on the ball all night long. That's the problem. He was under duress, Nick. Their best offense for a lot of that game was Lamar making lemonade out of lemons. I mean, Lamar under duress, being pressured and scrambling for big yardage, or even on the touchdown pass to put him up 14-0, he scrambled. Most quarterbacks in the league could not have made that play because he ran for his life. It got away from the pressure and then found Hollywood Brown in the back of the end zone for the touchdown. He was sacked three times,
Nick. It was a great play.
He was pressured on 18 of his 33 dropbacks. And so the offensive line didn't give him much time. And you showed some of the highlights. Yes, he missed the throw on the sidelines where he wasn't pressured. He definitely had his moments where he threw the ball badly. But I'm putting more of it on the offensive line that didn't protect him. And as you mentioned, the defense. This is supposed to be one of the best defenses in the league. They couldn't get pressure on Derek Carr even when they blitzed. So Carr throws for over 300 yards after halftime. And then, as you mentioned, they're up three with 37 seconds left, and they give up a 20-yard pass and an 18-yard pass on back-to-back plays to put the Raiders in field goal position. So I'm going to put most of it on the defense they couldn't hold and the offensive line that had Lamar running for his life most of the game, more so than on Lamar.
Okay, looks like Wilds gets the fumbles then to blame, because if Nick is blaming the accuracy, you're blaming the offensive line. There is the real reason. The actual reason in the story of this game is the fumbles. And there is a thin line between doing too much and making it happen, and the Ravens' offensive philosophy makes Lamar live on that line. And occasionally, they're going to get burned. My biggest issue, Nick, is this. It's not the accuracy. It's not the offensive line. It's the fact that the Ravens brass and the NFL media in general treat Lamar like he's indestructible. And he's a guy who hasn't gotten the big contract. And when you see him get hit with the first fumble that he loses, right, and he lands on his head, it's like, he lost the fumble. And then when he loses the second fumble, he's laying flat. He's more disappointed. But the first thing I thought was, is Lamar hurt? The fact that the Ravens are encouraging Lamar to put himself in jeopardy when he's landing on his head, to me, is baffling. Tua, against the Patriots, had a funky slide. He kind of slid awkwardly. And it was like, you can't do that. You got to learn to get down. Meanwhile, Lamar is throwing his body around. And just because he's occasionally successful, everyone says it's okay. If I was Lamar, I'd be like, you know what? I listen to first things first. I've decided I'm going to put a cap on how much I'm running and how many hits I'm going to take. I don't have my big contract.
Well, then he's
nothing is promised in the future. To me, it's insane.
Wild, but
then what makes him special?
But your point and my point actually line up directly. The reason he can't do that is because he's not accurate as a passer. The reason he has to be a magician and right, if you're saying Lamar's only going to run a half dozen times a game, then he's no longer a great quarterback. Like, let me show you. Broussard mentioned the pass to Sammy Watkins, but take that out. Aside from that, here is two best plays of the game, I think. One was one we just showed. The touchdown to Hollywood Brown, it's what he does before the touchdown that you're like, oh, my God.
Right.
Is there any other quarterback in the league that can make this play? And that's why you love him. And on the drive that should have been the game-winning drive, if the defense could have held up in the final 35 seconds, this play right here, is there another quarterback that gets 30 yards from this spot? The answer is no, because they go down. Wilds, what you're encouraging is go down at that first, where you make the first guy miss slide, right? Because that's what most quarterbacks would do. The problem for Lamar is, this right now is where he adds, because he takes a huge hit there. This is where he adds the most value. And it's because he has not improved enough as a passer. And the Lamar Jackson conversation, and Jenna, you've heard me say this, probably 25 times over the last couple of years, but I'm going to say it again. It's a frustrating one to me, Broussard, because it feels like everyone's on one of the extremes. Either they have been wrong on Lamar from the very beginning and don't want to admit it, or they patronize him and act like he shouldn't be improving in year four. He should be. It's somewhere in the middle. He's obviously a quarterback. He's obviously an excellent quarterback. There's not 10 guys in the league better than him. There might not be 6 guys in the league better than him. But his single limitation is such a glaring one that the fact that it doesn't seem to be getting better, if you're a Ravens fan, has to massively concern you, because he does spray the ball all over the field. And that almost forces him into having to make these dynamic running plays, which make him susceptible to the shots Wilds is worried about. And with those shots is going to come fumbles. Yep. When you're his build, if you're running like a running back but not built like a running back — he's a big quarterback, but he's not built like a running back — you're going to fumble the ball sometimes.
Play a little drawing a blank. Back to our top story.
Yes, you do, Jim.
And yours if you watch this. Yes, I do, Broussard. Ravens led the Raiders 14-0 at one point, but just couldn't seal the deal. Put Vegas away. Derek Carr followed up Lamar's second lost fumble of the game in overtime, tossed that game-winning touchdown to Zay Jones. Jay Gruden was happy. But here was the quarterback, Derek Carr, after the win. Derek, how would you describe this game?
You know what? It reminded me so much of my career so far. A lot of this, you know what I'm saying? And I'm thankful for this group, because on both sides we made plays to help us lose it and to help us win it. But the only thing that matters at the end of the day is that score, as we've talked about. So I'm glad that we won.
This in your
like
career?
I died and woke up and died again. And I was like a cat. I had multiple lives tonight. I don't like playing like that. It was tough. But again, we did a lot of really good things to win that football game tonight.
Meow. John Gruden. So, Broussard, after beating the Ravens, Raiders fans should be feeling blank.
Cautiously optimistic, Jenna. Cautiously optimistic. They look good. I mean, they got a pass rush. This is a team that in John Gruden's 3 years there has the fewest sacks in the NFL, okay? And last night, Max Crosby and Yannick Ngakoue, before he hurt his hamstring, they were all over Lamar Jackson. So that was good. The first half, they started poorly in the passing game. Carr was kind of off, but he got his timing together in the second half with his receivers. And the young receivers, Edwards and Ruggs, you know, improved just through the game. So they have reason to be optimistic, but here's why I say cautiously. They've been here before. Just a year ago, in fact. They started 6-3 last year with victories over New Orleans and at Kansas City and at Cleveland.
Oh, yeah.
And they finished, 2-5 or whatever it was, to finish at 8-8. So they got to sustain this. So cautiously optimistic. Don't go overboard.
Yeah, I would be more heavy on the cautiously than the optimistic. The Raiders, despite last night, are not a very good team, except for when teams inexplicably run a zero blitz at the exact worst time. It's how they got one of those two late season wins last year. Remember that Jets game? Greg Williams, send the dogs. It's like, okay, touchdown. And then last night, the Ravens did the same thing. What are you guys doing? What are you doing in this spot? But Wilds, you're going to like my answer here. Raiders fans should be feeling ready to lap it up. Now, not the Joe Judge type to lap it up. The laps they did around Arrowhead. But now you can do it on the Vegas Strip. Take a nice little lap around the Strip. Maybe stop by the Aria. If you do stop by the Aria, go to the High Roller Suite. Say hi to Tatiana for me. She will take care of you and probably set you up with a great room. But yeah, lap it up, Raiders. I don't know if it'll get better than this for you. You had a nice comeback win. You had a nice overtime victory against a potential contender. And this is what you do, whether you're Oakland or Vegas. You celebrate regular season wins, because you're not going to be a part of the postseason tournament. So ready to lap it up, Raiders fans, just like you did after your season went to hell last year after you beat the Chiefs. So that's what they should feel. Ready to lap it up around Vegas. Enjoy the night.
I hope you're still out partying. Speaking of, Joe Judge might need to lap it up if they lose another game. Jenna, my answer is bizarre. Yeah.
The fact that the Raiders had the game won, where literally the Ravens are on the field like, hey, good game. And then they lost the game, but with a penalty? I forgot the penalty on the offensive line. And
false
then
start.
It was an interception hands, and I'm like, oh, like, yeah, false start, sorry. I was like, you guys deserve to lose this game. You throw an interception in overtime in the red zone. But here's the bizarre part. Yeah. The last two quarterbacks to throw interceptions in the red zone in overtime, Jacoby Brissett and Russell Wilson, actually won the game. So totally bizarre. I thought that was the most bizarre stat I ever heard. Last three quarterbacks, Derek Carr, Russell Wilson, Jacoby Brissett, all won the game. Odd.
How about that?
There you go.
Well, these Raiders taking their show on the road to Pittsburgh in week two. Bunch of 1-0 teams. Back talking some Dallas Cowboys now. Didn't feed Zeke a whole lot in week one. He's still hungry, though. Can they rely on their star running back this season? We talk about that and more next. First things first.
Okay, quick math. The less your business spends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. Obvious. But with higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. So, to reduce costs and headaches, smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, accessed from anywhere. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. And you're improving efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. So do the math. See how you'll profit with NetSuite. By popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/FTF. netsuite.com/FTF. netsuite.com/FTF.
To run the no-huddle. Week one around the horn, we start around the NFL, rather. We start in Tennessee, where Julio Jones' time as a Titan off to a rocky start. The star receiver flagged for unnecessary roughness, costing the Titans 15 yards, with Arizona already up 10-0 in the first quarter. Head coach, and it's easy to see that he did it because they put him in the spotlight. Head coach Mike Vrabel, none too pleased. Listen to this.
That's absolutely nothing that we coach or teach. So that would fall into the category of doing dumb that hurts the team. Right there in bold letters.
I said a bad word.
Bold.
Nick, how should Julio feel about this?
Not great. And I'm sure Mike Vrabel, that phrase he used there is something he preaches to the team. Don't do dumb bleep that hurts the team. So I'm sure it resonates to a degree. But I consider this comment, I put it in the accurate but unnecessary bucket. So, and it's early in the Julio-Mike Vrabel relationship, I get that. Early in my relationship with Kevin Wilds, I did something like this. One day we were doing the show, and he had a piece of hair sticking straight out like a pencil from his head. It was accurate of me to point it out on the air, but it was unnecessary. I should have done it privately. I should have waited for a break and be like, Wilds, buddy, slick your hair back. But we didn't quite have the rapport yet, and I think it probably bothered Wilds. Sure. A little burn in his saddle for maybe a few weeks after. If I'm Julio, I'm not loving this. Like, hey, buddy, tell me about this privately. When asked about it at the press conference, there's a lot of things you can say that don't involve throwing your future Hall of Famer marquee offseason acquisition under the bus. You can say, hey, we lost the game for a lot of reasons. This was, you know, one of them, but not primarily. We got to block better. We got to, you know, I was a linebacker and I focus on defense. We have to at least seem to kind of want to play defense. A lot of things you can do that don't involve calling out Julio. So I, Broussard, I didn't love it. I understand that he's not wrong, but I think this can be handled privately in a film session, and I'm sure it was, as opposed to publicly to the media.
Nick, I do think that Vrabel should choose his words more carefully when you clearly didn't have your team prepared to play. All right, he didn't perform well either. All right, you give up 38 points correct. And lose at home to a team that even didn't even make the playoffs last year, you really shouldn't be coming up there like that. All right. All that said, because, you know, the play was fairly insignificant in the grand scheme of things. But all that said, I'm here for tough coaching. I'm old school. I like tough coaching. A year ago, the media was having a hissy fit because Bruce Arians had the audacity to publicly criticize Tom Brady. And Tom Brady was like, look, I'm a football player. I'm fine, you know? And they went on, and the rest is history. I don't think, I agree. Vrabel should have chosen his words better. He could have constructively criticized Julio. However, Julio should move on. It's not a big deal. This is nothing. He's a football player. You can take this. You're a man. So what, he says something about you. Just go on and play.
So I'm going to go a little bit off the board here. So I like Nick's answer and I like Broussard's answer. But my answer that I want to hear Vrabel say is this. Hey, there's a time and a place for everything. And everybody be like, huh, what? Because every once in a while, I think Vrabel would say that it's okay to like, hey, you know what? Give the cornerback a shot in the old face mask. Because remember, when the Titans were on a losing streak, what did he do? Hey, you know what?
Yes.
Let's break down on the Ravens logo. Totally inappropriate, but he did it on purpose to get the team fired up. So I think there could be a time where it's like, hey, Julio, you know what? Let one loose on the cornerback. Let him know you mean business.
Yeah, I think, and by the way, Wilds, I know you're kind of, you know, being a little tongue-in-cheek there, but there is an element like, this is the type of team, the type of mentality you've instilled in your team. We're fighters. We're going to go right up to the edge, and you'd like to see more of that on defense than in pregame and then by your star wide receiver. But if that's the case, then occasionally hand fighting is going to turn into a little, and that wasn't a punch. That was a slap. Like, we got to, by the way, real quick, Jenna, broadcasters as well during games, we got to stop calling everything a punch. Everything is not a punch. That you can use your hand to hit someone in the face and it not be a punch. This isn't a punch. This is a mush face. This is a slap. It's not a punch. Julio didn't throw a punch. Mush face. We all know what a punch is.
It was a jab.
Yeah,
it was a jab.
Like, but just like in the Chiefs, they threw that Browns player out. They're like, he punched
Nick.
The Chiefs coach. He didn't punch Greg Lewis. He hit Greg Lewis. There's a difference. We got it. Language matters. That's not a punch. We got to be more careful.
I think it was a jab.
It's my word of the day. I think it was mush face.
Mush face?
Let's talk some Ezekiel Elliott.
Yeah, mush face.
Zeke struggled to get anything going Thursday against the Bucks. And nothing is more disrespectful than mushface. Ended up with only 11 carries while Dak threw the ball 58 times. So how does the star running back fit into a game plan as pass heavy as Dallas's is? Here was offensive coordinator Kellen Moore.
We called 28 runs in the game. 12 times Dak threw it on the particular run just because that's what they presented the opportunity for us. And so felt good about it. And again, as the season goes, it's a long season. There's different matchups, different defensive schemes. We're going to need Zeke to pound it. You know, it could be this week, could be the following week. You know, he's always ready, but he does a great job and he handles all these different circumstances so well. That's the exciting thing about him.
All right, well, a little good news for Zeke. Cowboys did get all-pro guard Zach Martin back off the COVID list yesterday, too, which will help everyone on that offense. But, Broussard, can the Cowboys rely on Zeke this season?
Jenna, I'm not ready to write Zeke off as a solid, productive back, but I am ready to say he's not going to give you 1,300 or 1,400 yards like he did in his first three or four seasons, so... he's not that guy anymore. In fact, I expect to see Tony Pollard get increased carries in this offense because he's looked a lot like he's got a lot more burst than Zeke. And that's not just this year in game one, but at parts of the season last year as well. So I think Zeke can still be a productive back in this offense. But the days of him being the offense, where it was Dak, you manage the game, we're going to ride Zeke, that's over. All right, and that's fine because Dak has grown into a quarterback who I believe can carry the team. And with him throwing the ball with those receivers, that should open things up for Zeke. So solid, productive, but not one of the top three backs in the league anymore, no.
it'd be fine, Broussard, if the Cowboys hadn't given Zeke that contract. Because they gave him that contract, they need him to be far more than part of a Tony Pollard platoon. But unfortunately, I don't know if he has that left in him. So I actually, Wilds, like Kellen Moore's comments. That is smart, sophisticated football commentary. Each game is its own isolated being. We're going to do what's best to win in this week might not be best to win the next week. We need to adjust accordingly. So I think Kellen Moore is correct on almost all fronts, except for where he says or implies, but if we gave Zeke 25 carries, we know he'd produce. No, I don't know that. I have no reason to believe that. And Zeke's yards per game over his career, it's like a just terribly declining stock. It's 108 yep. to 98 to 95 to 85 to 65. And now this year after one game, it's 33. That's in one direction straight down. So I agree with Kellen Moore's sentiment. I disagree with the idea that the old Zeke or even the semi-old Zeke is coming back, because I think the new Zeke is an old Zeke, just the wrong version of old that Cowboys are looking for.
The new Zeke is the old Zeke. See, I like the new Zeke being the old Zeke. Yeah, so the new Zeke is the old Zeke, the slim down Zeke. I'm interested in how the slim down Zeke will play against the Falcons. I don't think you can put anybody up against that Bucs defense and they're going to have success. I did like Kellen Moore's answer where he's like, hey, I called them. So he was a little bit of a vote of confidence towards Zeke. So I thought that was good, Jenna. But I'm interested to see what he does against the Falcons before I'm ready to say whether I like the new or the old or the old old.
Random comic. I never liked new Coke. For what it's worth. Let's talk some Tom Brady, the GOAT on the field and on social media, it would appear. Nobody did. As he appeared to troll the Falcons ahead of the Bucs Week 2 game against Atlanta, Brady posted a hype video with a reference perhaps to the 28-3 lead Atlanta had in the Super Bowl, only to lose to Tom Brady in the Pats. Rare. Wilds, are you buying Brady was trolling the Falcons here?
No. And if it and I'm willing to be wrong here, because Brady's social media team is very sophisticated, whether they're doing the jugs machine thing, whether it's Brady tossing the ball to himself, whether he's making his own hype videos, his social media team, Brady's always been great, but his social media team has gone from here with the TV times all the way up here. So they're doing A+. But the idea that this tiny Easter egg is planted to troll the Falcons, I think is A, not true, and if it is true, B, unnecessary. You think it's true? I don't believe it. I don't believe it. You could always post it at 3:28 if you wanted to. That seems to be a little much.
It's clearly unnecessary, Wiles. However, look, as much as I like Tom Brady, I gotta admit, he's squirrely. All right, and this was a squirrely thing to do. Squirrely. He's definitely trolling the Falcons, all right? Look at that fish-eating grin on his face. He knows exactly what he's doing. Why else you gotta post it? Do we need him to post to tell us that the season is underway? Do we need him to post to tell us that it's good to be 1-0? He doesn't even mention the Falcons. All right, he's like Travis Kelce. Why is he not even thinking about the Falcons? He doesn't publicly mention them, but here
he doesn't even know
he is
the
trolling them. Believe you me,
Wilds,
he's trolling.
Yo, all right, listen, I think it's absurd. Of all the minutes in the day he could post, it just happens to be that post this week. So, of course, it's on purpose. But, and I hate to do this to a teammate, but, Wilds, you know it's coming. You can't 13 minutes ago crush my guy Travis Kelce for not knowing who the Chiefs' opponent is, and then moments ago say the Cowboys are about to play the Falcons, and now when clearly the Bucs are about to play the Falcons, it's your job to know the Cowboys' schedule. They actually play the Chargers, sir, so you expect Zeke to be better against the Chargers. So if you can't know week two, then maybe Travis Kelce doesn't have responsibility to know week two either, buddy. Yeah, that's right. Drop your
face
head in shame.
Drop it in shame.
And write Kelce an apology. Write him an apology.
Well, we are back talking the thrilling finish to Chiefs-Browns as Wilds goes ahead and commits to memory all the schedules of all the teams. Cleveland came close yet again, knocking off the Kings of the AFC. Did they prove that KC's beatable? That plus the entire schedule when we come back.
Yeah, that's right, Jenna.
Back here with former head coach Eric Mangini. Coach, we're talking the Chiefs' fourth quarter rally to stave off your Cleveland Browns Sunday. Took a little Mahomes magic to pull it off. Took a little Nick Wright prayer as well. That's not important now. Cleveland led the whole game until Travis Kelce's go-ahead score midway through the fourth quarter. Oh, Travis knew what he was doing there and who was in front of him. Baker, one shot to drive down and win it, but got picked off, and that sealed it for the Chiefs. All right, Coach, was the Browns' loss a total disaster, or was it the blueprint to beating the Chiefs?
Hi, Jenna. Well, first of all, my Cleveland Browns, that's a very generous description that you brought me in with. Maybe we could put that one on the back burner. But in terms of whether it's a blueprint or not, I don't think it's necessarily the blueprint at by any stretch, because not many people are going to have the ability that the Browns have in terms of what they can do offensively. When you've got the running backs that they have, the offensive line that they have, the ability to threaten teams with the running game as substantially as they can do it, it opens things up that typically teams can't open up. And everybody's got to load the box to make sure that they stop the running game. So that creates tremendous opportunities, not only in terms of play action. I think it helps Baker Mayfield significantly because it allows him to simplify some coverages. It allows him to work the play action, and it's not something that many other teams can do by any stretch of the imagination.
So I'm surprised but glad to hear Coach say that, because I almost agree with him. The part I disagree with is, give every team Cleveland's offensive line, give every team Cleveland's running backs. You can't beat Kansas City that way. This idea that, run the ball, time of possession, play keep away. Patrick Mahomes, this is fourth year starting. One team has beaten the Chiefs that way. The Indianapolis Colts, 3 years ago, in a game Mahomes was injured and Tyreek Hill didn't play. You know how you beat the Chiefs? Have a quarterback that can do what Baker couldn't at the end. Have the ball last, drive the field, and score before Mahomes gets to touch it again. And I know folks would be like, oh, what about the Super Bowl? The Super Bowl is a totally separate situation where you had Mahomes running for his life the entire game. Yes, you can also beat the Chiefs if you're going to hit Mahomes 25 times, about 9 of which illegal hits to the helmet, but set that aside. That also works. But that doesn't have to do with running the football. Like, I know we like to have this idea that, Cleveland, they were on the precipice. No, they weren't. Because it takes them 9 plays in 7 minutes to go 75 yards. And you know what it took the Chiefs? A flick of the wrist. Flick of the wrist, and Tyreek Hill's throwing up the deuces, and now you're scared. So the way you beat the Chiefs is you outscore them. In Mahomes' losses in his career, Coach, the Chiefs have given up an average of 36 points. You're not beating this team unless you get into the mid-30s or above. So you know how you do that? Throw the football. And you need a quarterback that for a day can go toe-to-toe with Mahomes. This whole idea of beat him through the ground and keep the ball out of Mahomes' hands, people keep saying it. No one's been able to do it. It's been 4 years. No one's been able to do it. So maybe it's not possible.
So, Nick, I know that you were probably going through that whole game and you were completely confident throughout the whole game that the Chiefs were going to win, right? You did no problem. You knew that the punter was going to fumble the ball. You knew that Baker was going to throw a ridiculous pick at the end of the game. Of course you knew that was going to happen. Now, to me, the blueprint part of this, and I've said this over and over, if you're playing Kansas City, you need to keep Mahomes in the pocket. Okay, so that's one thing that everybody can take away from this, and I've said it since the beginning of time. Now, it's easier said than done, but when you allow them to get out of the pocket and roll around and let those receivers have 15 seconds to get open, bad things are going to happen. I'd say that's part of a blueprint. But this idea that Kansas City is automatically going to win every single game and that being able to run the football and keeping them off the field doesn't help, That's flawed. Yeah, they got 2 turnovers, and I don't know if you can count on multiple turnovers late in the game as your strategy to win.
All right, look, you guys on this show, you tease me because you say I'm old, but way back in 1997, all right, during Michael Jordan's second three-peat, I'm a fledgling beat writer for the Akron Beacon Journal covering the Cleveland Cavaliers, and the Bulls are coming to town. So what I do is I look through the handful of losses that the Bulls had that year, and I pick out the commonalities and write an article saying this is the blueprint. If the Cavs are going to beat the Bulls and Michael Jordan tonight, this is the blueprint. This is how it's done. And guess what? The Cavs did beat the Jordan Bulls that night, but they did it. It was like the direct opposite. It was the opposite of everything that I had written, all the commonalities of the previous losses. My point, Nick, is there's no one blueprint. All right, I mean, you mentioned, well, the Chiefs have never lost this way. The Chiefs have hardly lost, period, with Pat Mahomes. And I'm with Coach. I mean, the Browns can do things most teams can't. With that running game, which was great against the Chiefs, you keep Mahomes off the field. Now your defense is improved. And if you cut down on the turnovers or eliminate them altogether, you may win that game. You can talk about the Ravens. Oh, they're run heavy. They can't do anything with the Chiefs, but they can't throw the ball. That's the difference. Mayfield is a solid passer. He threw for over 300 yards, Nick. So with that running game, that will open up the passing game with Mayfield being a better passer than a Lamar Jackson, then that is a way that you have a good chance of beating the Chiefs. As good as any. Okay. There's no one blueprint, all right? That's as good a chance as any.
There is. Here's the thing, Wiles, and this is what everyone gets wrong. There is a blueprint. Because you're right, the Chiefs haven't lost much, so we can go through them. Mahomes' first year starting. Who did they lose to and how? What happened at the end? Patriots beat them. How? They had the ball at the end and scored 30-plus and won. The Rams in that epic Monday night game, they scored 54 and had the ball at the end. Phillip Rivers, final throw of the game, two-point conversion to beat them. In the playoffs, how did the Patriots beat them? Brady won the coin toss because, of course, they win the coin toss, and Mahomes never gets to touch the ball. The next year, when Mahomes, the Colts beat them the way I mentioned, the anomalous game. Then, the only other game they lost once Mahomes was healthy. What happened? Oh, Ryan Tannehill has the ball at the end. They scored 35 and win. Last year, their only loss in the Super Bowl. The Raiders scored 40. People, America, I know you want to see the Chiefs lose. Hey, listen, this is how you got to beat them. People are like, oh, you can't get in a shootout. It's the only way anyone has beaten them is to get in a shootout. And I know this.
Except Tampa Bay.
What was the score of the Super Bowl? That was a shootout, right?
Okay.
But they hang on.
No, hold on a second.
Went on Tampa.
Hold on a second. Wait a minute. Did Tampa win the game because they played keep away? Because they ran the ball? No.
Yes. I just want to know what the score was.
There is another way. 33-9. Or 31-9. Make the Chiefs offense, hold the Chiefs offense in single digits and make Mahomes look terrible. Good luck at that. I don't think you're going to be able to do it, but if that's the game plan, so be it. That also works against every quarterback in league history. Harass them the entirety of the game. But that's not what we're talking about. Yes, I agree. That's the other way. One team has done it, and God bless. Bully for them. Wilds, people have it wrong. You've got to go score 35 if you want to beat Kansas City. You're not going to do that with six-yard Nick Chubb runs. And I'm so sick, Wilds, of folks acting like the muffed punt mattered. Does anyone actually think the Chiefs were going to drive the field and score? Do you actually think they weren't going to score? That stadium obviously mattered. Do you think they weren't going to score?
Can you guarantee that they would?
I don't know, but they gave him great field position, and that was the moment that everyone realized that Cleveland was going to Cleveland, and you celebrated. I have intel from watching with Dusty that you were celebrating like Christmas morning when you saw the punt, so don't tell me it was inconsequential. Coach, spin it forward. What do you think the Ravens learn from this the Browns game? Do you think the Ravens are coming in and going to have a big
luck,
bounce
Ravens.
Back game against the Chiefs?
Best or is it
just like,
team we've
you
got.
Know, Derek Carr just torched us. Mahomes is probably going to do it too.
Well, they're totally different teams, and to Chris's point, they don't throw the ball as effectively as Cleveland throws the ball, and that's one of the biggest problems. And defensively, they're going to bring a lot of different looks. They're going to try to disguise coverages. And if they don't keep Mahomes in the pocket, that's going to go really poorly for them over the course of the game. And I'm not sure if they have the discipline to keep Mahomes in the pocket. But there's going to be a significant amount of disguising coverages, bringing different looks, trying to take away their playmakers. And they're just not built the same way that Cleveland is. So I don't know how effective the passing game is going to be against Kansas City.
Yeah. Keeping Mahomes in the pocket is like winning a land war in Asia. It sounds good. No one's ever done it, but one day it'll happen. Maybe. We'll just keep throwing. It's not going to happen. To be clear, since Dusty absolutely sold me out, I did celebrate the muff punt because I had the Chiefs at a bad number. Bet them early in the week at -6.5, and I thought the muff punt would allow them to cover. I needed the extra possession, not because I was worried they were going to lose. They were never going. You can't beat them that way. Jenna, you just can't beat them that way. And Dusty, you're banned from the house.
Poor Dusty will never be invited to Nick's house again.
Never invited again.
Dusty, come sit next to me and my kids. We'll watch a nice, quiet football game together. My kids will love you. You mentioned the Ravens. Let's talk about them. Get back to last night's overtime thriller. Would you say, Coach? It looked like Baltimore had it in the bag, but did Lamar fumble away a win in week one? Come on, Dusty. Kale nachos. Coach is right. Time now for stories to start your morning, brought to you by Subway. And oh, the story of the morning, Raiders-Ravens was the story last night. Picked this one up in overtime, tied at 27, 3rd-and-7 for the Ravens. You saw what happened there. Lamar trying to escape the pocket, but Carl Nassib punches that ball out. Raiders recover, and they take over. Two plays later, Derek Carr drops back. Derek Carr, he's going for it. Sees a wide open Zay Jones for the walk-off win. How about the Raiders? They trailed 14-0 at one point. They tied the game three times in the fourth quarter and then somehow overcame mistakes to rally for the overtime win. After the game, losing quarterback Lamar Jackson on what went wrong.
Any loss you have will be tough. You know, working so hard all season to prepare for a team and come down overtime and we lose. But my team played great, though, so just got to keep building, keep stacking, keep getting better every day. We'll be fine, but that loss hurt. We got to move on quick. You know, everybody hate losing. The whole team hate losing. The coaching staff hate losing. Our cafeteria guys hate losing. You know, Manny and Shorty, those guys hate losing as well. You know, they're part of the team. It's going to be a quick turnaround, though. You know, we got the Chiefs Sunday. We just played Monday night, so we got to get ready.
All right, Nick, how much responsibility falls on Lamar for last night's loss?
Well, Jenna, I'm going to say what I know everyone's thinking. Did you see Lamar's neck there? My God.
Neck.
But despite
I
that,
knew it.
Listen, I know everyone was thinking it. Listen, despite that, and despite the fact, yeah, of course you were. Lamar made some really not only great plays, but plays only he can make. There were two plays, one touchdown pass and one run to set up what could have been the game-winning field goal. It's like, hey, how many quarterbacks in the league could do this exact thing? And the answer is just Lamar Jackson. And it's what makes him special. The touchdown pass to Hollywood Brown, what he has to do here, no other quarterback in the league does this and then ends up with a touchdown pass out of it. Nobody. And then the run in overtime, or right before overtime, this run here, other quarterbacks can do this and they go down there. They don't then get another 20 yards. So it's like, hey, he did all that. He also had a beautiful deep pass to Sammy Watkins, and they were up 3 with 35 seconds left. So how's it his fault? The reason it's his fault is even if you remove the critical fumbles, he had so many missed layups, Broussard. And I've used this comp before and I will use it again. There are so many obvious similarities between Lamar and Giannis prior to this playoff run that it is hard to ignore. Obviously great, obviously one of the 10 best in the world at what he does, but an obvious hole in the game that you think is going to put a ceiling on what his team can do. For Giannis, it was the inability to hit any shots and then free throws. And then when they won the championship, hit a few shots, hit all his free throws, and dominated in what he was great at. with Lamar, what's concerning and frustrating and the reason that you're like, oh, he's not going to go on the same trajectory Giannis did. Have you seen growth in what he's not good at, the accuracy in the intermediate or distance passing game from his rookie year? Because I haven't. And to me, last night, game one of year four, he looked the exact same as how we saw him look year one, year two, year three. And that's the concern. And that's why this Ravens team, even if they were fully healthy, to me, has a very clear ceiling. And it's not about the fumbles. It's not about the injuries. It's about Lamar staying static as a passer.
All right, well, look, since you brought up Giannis, when people complained about him in the past, oh, he doesn't do this, he doesn't do that, I would often say, okay, what would this team be without him? Okay, and it's the same thing I say about Lamar. They wouldn't be very good. And I know John Harbaugh is a very good coach, and they got a defense and all that.
Definitely.
They wouldn't be very good. We saw them without Lamar and with Joe Flacco, and they had to put Lamar in, and all of a sudden they become a pretty good team. So I agree with you, Nick, that there's a cap on how far this team can go as long as Lamar doesn't throw the football very well, you know, compared to Pat Mahomes and Josh Allen and all these other guys that they have to beat to get to the Super Bowl. But as far as last night, I cannot put that on Lamar Jackson because he was running for his life all night long. All right, what you showed, the highlights that you showed, he was scrambling. Right, he was running like on the long scramble that he ran for. That was forced because of the pressure that came from the Raiders. And then this play that you said no other quarterback could make, you're right. But he was running for his life, and he makes a great throw to Brown at the back of the end zone. He was pressured on 18 of his 33 dropbacks. He was sacked 3 times, and a lot of the night they did have some good runs by the running backs. But most of the night, their best offense was Lamar making something happen. Like they were playing in the backyard, and he was just making something happen. All right, so I can't put it on him. I'm putting it on the offensive line, which didn't give him the protection, even though the Raiders have the lowest sack rate in the league over the last 3 years. And I'm putting it on the defense. The defense, Nick, is vaunted. Supposed to be one of the best in the league, yet they give Derek Carr 300-plus yards after halftime, right? Yeah, they guarded well early on. But as the game wore down, those defensive backs started fading, and they didn't get pressure on Derek Carr. All right, even when they blitzed, they didn't get pressure. Nick, for everything you said, they're up 3 with 37 seconds left. Vegas doesn't even have a timeout left. And they let him march 50 yards and get the field goal to tie the game and send it into overtime. Overtime. So I blame it on the defense, Wiles, and the offensive line before I get to Lamar.
Yeah, well, I blame it on the coaching staff with a heavy dose of Lamar. And here's why. And Nick, I'm going to ask you a question. When we talk about, Lamar is making plays no other quarterback could make. Do you think that Patrick Mahomes occasionally leaves yards on a run? Like, he's like, you know what? I probably could have gotten 5 more yards, but I'm going to go down. I do too. And I do not think Lamar does that. I think Lamar plays a certain style. I think he's been encouraged to play that style. And there's a certain aura of invincibility around Lamar that we don't ascribe to any other athlete. If Josh Allen made a play where he was running and fell on his head like that, all of Buffalo would be up in arms. But instead, we're like, gotta hold on to the ball. Like, you're asking too much of him. And I specifically said Mahomes because Mahomes had that little weird, like, stinger neck injury last year that put him out of the game. Lamar is in harm's way here. I just dislike the style that they play, and it's not it's a compliment. Like, no other quarterback can do it. Like, I'm not sure that's true. No other quarterback chooses to do it, and I don't think Lamar should either until he gets a contract.
No. I think both are true. I don't think any other quarterback chooses to or could do it because his speed, his elusiveness, and, you know, I mean, not to be a broken record, but because of that thick neck, he can handle some of the punishment other guys can't. But set that aside. But the other reason Patrick Mahomes is not doing that is because Mahomes knows I can get these yards another way. And Lamar doesn't know right. that. And again, there are a lot of passers that are better drop back passers than Lamar that are not even close to better quarterbacks. Derek Carr is probably a better drop back passer than Lamar. There is no universe where I would take Derek Carr over Lamar. Matt Stafford is assuredly a better drop back passer than Lamar. Does it mean he's a better quarterback than Lamar? It's very close, but I don't think so. I know a lot of America probably does. But so I'm not saying Lamar is not an excellent player. What I'm saying is, at some point, he is not going to be, Broussard, the best athlete on the field at all times. Right. And even when he is still the best athlete on the field, and what that forces the defense to do as far as how they defend him should make the passing game as open as it ever will be. As his athleticism declines, the passing lanes are going to get smaller, right? Because people aren't going to be as threatened by the run. And he's still missing layups. He's still, I mean, the swing pass out to the right is a layup. One of those passes down the deep sideline, it would have been a great pass, but he missed it by 12 yards. It damn near domed a cheerleader. Like, he's got to get better at these things if the Ravens are going to be taken seriously, not as a team that can compete for the playoffs, but as a team that can compete for a Super Bowl.
Well, Nick, this has been a concern of mine since Lamar entered the league and became a starter. How long is he going to last, to Wild's point, playing this style? Wilds, they don't have a choice. All right, it's not like they can play another style and be good. They can't just have Lamar throw it 40 times or 30 to 40 times and be good. He has to play this way to be effective, but how long is he going to last? We talk about Cam Newton as if he's done. He's 32 years old. But right. he is an old 32 right. because of all the hits he's taken, and he's twice as big as Lamar, and I think he's got a thick neck too, Nick, so that's not going to save Lamar.
Yeah, he does.
He took some shots last night and landed on his head a few times where, Wiles, I agree. I was like, man. And remember, guys, before the game, there was a story that came out that he has not yet signed his long-term contract because he doesn't have an agent. Lamar, either get an agent or a lawyer to start talking with the Ravens and sign the contract as soon as possible. So you, if you get hurt, you're protected.
No, Wilds, but you said earlier that shot of him laying on the ground absolutely terrified me when I saw it last night. Skip and Chad are going to pick up the conversation right here. Much more in this Monday night game coming up. Have a great day, everyone. Undisputed starts right now.